My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Hour number 2 of the Hoffman Show here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Top Commanders headlines for you at the top of the next hour. That's 6 o'clock sharp, but in a moment we'll play Not My Beat for you. So Not My Beat today is a bit of a special edition, and it's one that Anthony can co-sign because it is with my old professor at Syracuse, Dennis Denninger. Now, Anthony, you had Denninger as well. What class did you have Denninger for?
It was a Super Bowl.
You had Super Bowl in society.
I think it's the same class. It's a 4-week class.
Okay, for us, it was a full semester.
I think ours was like four weeks, 1 credit.
Oh, no, ours was like a full class.
I don't think I did.
But I took mine was the first one. So this we talk
first
about in the
ever.
Full interview. I cut this out of this version that everyone's about to hear. But so there's a class at Syracuse University called Super Bowl in Society. And it's how the Super Bowl has become a part of American society and the biggest sporting event in the world and has, you know, affected broadcast media and advertising and all these different things. And Denninger decided to write a book about it, which is why I was talking to him about this. I love any excuse to talk to him. Actually, he was at the Super Bowl last year on Radio Row, and he and my wife and I went around and toured like the Super Bowl experience thing. And that was awesome to walk around with Denninger. Cause he's like, oh, this and this factoid. Like, it was amazing. As you guys hear, so smart, such a great storyteller, all that kind of stuff. But what they've done with the class is Dennis now numbers them with the Roman numerals. So like it's Super Bowl in Society, I think this year, XV15. I was in 1 before there was a Roman numeral. I was the first ever edition of this class.
Wow, that's pretty dope. Then I gotta pull mine up then.
All right, well you figure
I'm
out.
I'm curious.
You gotta figure out what you had him for and what year it was and what edition of the class. But we have the full version of this interview in our podcast feed. You have to scroll back a couple of days to find it, but it is there, and the full version is on my YouTube channel as well at Craig Hoffman of how the Super Bowl became what it is, the biggest day in America, a day. That really is like a holiday. And so that is today's Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
It is my absolute pleasure to be joined now by a man who had a long storied career in television, then decided to become a professor, and then he decided to write a book. The book coming out soon is The Football Game That Changed America. It is about the Super Bowl, which tracks because the class that he started teaching at Syracuse is a class called Super Bowl in Society, of which I took the first ever one. Dennis Denninger, welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me, Craig, and it's good to see you again. You know, don't look a whole lot older than when you did back there. What year did you take that as, a sophomore or junior, do you recall?
It would have been, I think it was actually my senior year, because I was only at Syracuse for 2, and I'm pretty sure that was my senior year, but it might have been my junior year. I don't remember.
Made good choices while you were there then.
I did. I mean, you look at the Super Bowl compared to these other major events. What are some of the through lines of whether it's a tennis major or really, I mean, the World Cup would be the biggest one, or a Champions League final would be the biggest one. And then what are some of the things that you think make the Super Bowl unique and in its own thing here in the U.S., but also its place in the global stage?
World Cup soccer and the tennis majors and international horse racing tend to have far more diverse international audience spread far and wide. I believe that the number of countries that Wimbledon sells their media rights to is something like 145 countries. Wow. Well, in 145 countries, you'd be hard-pressed to get enough people to say what gridiron football is. So the Super Bowl is far more of a concentrated fan base in the United States. And it is an overwhelming event in that, okay, if you're watching Wimbledon in England and there isn't a British player, well, maybe you're not watching it as closely as you would. But when you're watching the Super Bowl, it really doesn't matter who the teams are in the Super Bowl. You're going to get a huge audience. And what the NFL is doing is they are working on expanding that global audience. They want the Super Bowl to become a far more of have a greater footprint around the world. I remember being at the Australian Open, and it wraps up in late January. And I remember watching the Super Bowl at the Nine Network headquarters on that Monday morning, because Sunday night was Monday morning over there, and going to a Super Bowl party and folks getting all excited about it. And I think there was an NFL player who had come from Australia, and he was there as their analyst. So that kind of thing they want to replicate around the world, and they're, you know, doing more and more of these international games. They started the first international game ever goes back to 1926. Obviously, it wasn't televised, and it was a game in Toronto. You know, New York played a Toronto Maple Leafs. They didn't have the Argonauts at the time. But what they've done now is, you know, this year they're expanding to Brazil. Every single time they play in a British stadium, whichever one it is, it's an instant sellout. The games last year, the past couple of years in Germany have been huge. And going forward, that's one of the things, I think one of the things that people will find interesting in this book is the last chapter is my projections for what Super Bowl 100, Super Bowl C, will look like in the year 2066. Now, hopefully, lots of your listeners and viewers and folks who subscribe to the podcast will still be around in 2066, and maybe they can prove me right or wrong. But a lot of it has to do with technology, and technology has always been this driving force behind which creative minds follow. So if it becomes possible, then creative minds will say, what can we do with this? Like, you could not have created ESPN if it were not possible for geosynchronous orbit satellites to deliver communications. If somebody hadn't developed that, it would have been, you know, a service that would be delivered via landlines. It just would not have happened. And fiber didn't exist at the time. And fiber has delivered now a lot more than what satellites do. And that was, again, a technological advance. So when you look at technology, by the end of this decade, the return of supersonic transport will be with us. There are planes that are being tested at two American companies already that they can carry about 80 to 85 passengers, and they'll go twice the speed of sound. Now you're talking international. You could just as easily include London as one of the teams in your NFC or AFC East, because you can fly there in less than 4 hours. If you can fly to London in less than 4 hours, that's less time than it takes you to get to Seattle. So suddenly the world gets smaller, and the NFL will reap the benefits of that.
That's fascinating, especially as someone who just got off of an international trip and definitely wishes that plane ride from to and fro to Paris was a little bit quicker. Dennis Dettinger, professor emeritus at Syracuse University and author of the new book, The Football Game That Changed America, with us here on The Hoffman Show. One of the things that I have always been fascinated with when it comes to the NFL and football and the popularity is the fact that the game at the center of it all is so surface level understood by most of the people watching it. Getting to cover the league, like the amount of detail that goes into a game plan that these coaches, that these players think about on a week in, week out, snap in, snap out basis, it's so much deeper than the ways that we talk about the game as a public. And I say we as a member of the media, yes, I perhaps know more about those details than the average person who hasn't spent a decade covering the NFL. But at the same time, like, you know, the way that we do the analysis on television isn't wrong either. Like, yeah, you have to be good on third down or whatever. You don't turn the football over. Like, yeah, nope, that actually is pretty important, even if coaches spend their sleepless nights thinking about receiver splits and should I stack this or bunch that and yada, yada. What is it about football that you think has allowed that to be the centerpiece at the very core of this gigantic universe that has spawned around it that includes, you know, advertising and politics and media and all the things that you write about it in the book? What is it about football at the core that allows it to be that linchpin?
I want to go back in time. I'm going to quote what Lamar Hunt said. And Lamar Hunt, in his late 20s, had a lot of money. His father was H.L. Hunt, who had a huge oil business in Texas. And Lamar Hunt was thinking about, well, we've got to bring a professional team to Texas. Imagine the 1950s. There was no professional sports team in the state of Texas. So Lamar Hunt was thinking, well, should I bring a baseball team or bring a football team? And he watched the 1958 NFL championship game, which went down in history as the greatest game ever played. It went to sudden death overtime. And upwards of 40 million people were watching in that overtime the audience built. And Lamar Hunt came away from that saying, football is made for television. And this has been echoed a number of times. You have great bursts of action. You have individual stars. And you have time in which, in between each of these bursts of action, to reset what's coming next, or tell the story of someone. You've got 30 to 40 seconds in between. When they started covering the NFL, they didn't even have instant replay. That didn't come along till 1963. So there was a lot of talk that was going on, you know, in the games, between plays. But each of these plays is like this special little nugget of something that's unexpected that can happen. And it's also a great sport in that you have a lot of variables. You've got 11 players on each side, and any two of them could get involved, or any five or six if they tap the ball one way or the other. And you've got so many different ways in which the ball can move. You can have it batted back and go sideways, forwards, lateral. A lot of sports, you know, tennis, the ball pretty much goes either front or back, you know what I'm saying? Or bowling, it better go ahead toward the pins. So there are certain sports that have fewer variables than football. There are variables in a number of other team sports. Soccer is one of them. But soccer doesn't come in these interspersed bursts of action with time in between. So I think it's a perfect audience sport, and it's a great way to develop storylines. And there's great interest, and it does have drama. And it does have contact. There is not necessarily a violence, but there is this confrontation. There are collisions that, oh my goodness, you know, that made the ball go this way. Or, you know, this guy bounced up, or, you know, John Elway doing a helicopter turn in the Super Bowl when he's hit at the, you know, at the goal line, gets back up, et cetera, and having scored and they win the game. There's so many different variables, I think, that capture people's imaginations, even though in football, you never see these guys without their helmets when they're in play. So it takes away a little bit, like you and I, this interview would be a far less interesting if all you could see was our eyes, you know. So that's why you get storytelling. You see them on the sideline. They roll in video. You hear sound bites from them. And so you actually see their faces. So it does have its restrictions, but it certainly has a whole lot more going for it. And it's attracted a great audience. And when I didn't mention the word violence, There's a concern in many quarters about the game of football being a game that leaves people seriously injured or causes them to have a greater rate of mortality. And as the NFL works toward making it a safer game, I think you'll find that becomes a little less of a concern, hopefully. But there's certain things about sports in which men or women collide with force that attract attention. There are not a lot of high school mixed martial art teams, are there? Did you want the high school? Was there an MMA team at your school? No,
there was not.
Is the UFC a giant international success? Yes. So whether or not players continue to play football at the high school level or younger levels probably does not have a lot of impact on whether or not the NFL succeeds, because this, the collisions, the power and all of it is what is drawing attention. And there will be players, if they even have to train at individual private sites, there'll be players who say, you know, I really would like that $30 million contract and maybe I will take a risk. There are certain high risk, high rewards professions that still exist in American society. Consider rock star. Think of all the rock stars who have lived into their 70s and 80s. You know, high risk, high reward. So it's one of those things that that is also part of the lure. Is this person going to be the survivor? This person's going to be stronger than the other one. There's so many different things at work in football that I think draw mass audiences.
Dennis Dettinger, professor emeritus at Syracuse University and author of the new book, The Football Game That Changed America, with us here on The Hoffman Show. I had never considered the kind of the formactics of the game before and how perfect it is for television. That's really interesting, as well as all the other stuff you add there. What's your favorite thing that you learned in the process of writing the book that you didn't know when you started writing it, even though you've been teaching a Super Bowl class since I was in school?
Favorite thing. You know what? I'll tell you what. Joe Namath is this central figure in the history of the Super Bowl and of, you know, the last five decades of the NFL. But I did not realize that the NFL was actually thinking about scrapping the whole idea of a Super Bowl after the first two, in which the Green Bay Packers won handily. And it looked to people like, okay, this thing's going to continue as we got a major league team playing a minor league team. So why should we tune in? And the ratings actually were lower for Super Bowl III. The number of television viewers was down. Everybody expected the Colts were an 18-point favorite, that they were going to win. And that was pretty interesting to me. What a pivotal role Joe Namath and the Jets played in the actual continuation of this huge colossus that we know today might have just fizzled away and become yet another, like an NFL championship game. And the great thing about the Super Bowl is that it's planned for a neutral site 4 or 5 years in advance. You can promote the hell out of it. Every other American sport, the NBA, World Series, you don't know where it's going to be until a week and a half before it starts. You don't know where the NBA championship is going to be from year to year. So that's one of the great things about the Super Bowl, and the very fact that its survival depended pretty much on the result of one game. And that was pretty interesting.
That is very interesting. And nothing good has happened to the Jets ever since. So, you know, sorry to all my Jets fans, maybe, cousins, about that.
Maybe in my forecast for 2066, maybe I should have forecast that the New York Jets finally make it back to a Super Bowl. You know, I think what's sad is that there are a few teams, original NFL teams, the Detroit Lions and the Cleveland Browns, that have not made it to a Super Bowl. And that's one of the things that I'm rooting for, is that one of these teams with great tradition that has had the support of a loyal community year after year after year will finally make it to the Super Bowl. And what a wonderful story that would be.
That would be. I am personally pulling for Detroit to pull that off. Love what they're doing.
Cleveland, they can wait another decade until some of the bad actors in their current organization are gone. But that's much more about our regular show, Dennis, than an interview like this. Dennis, this was great. Thank you so much. I can't wait to dive into the book. I wasn't super keen on reading books in college, but I promise I'll read this one.
Good stuff. Well, I hope you do, and I hope you enjoy it. And I hope that your listeners will take a look. The book is entitled The Football Game That Changed America, How the NFL Created a National Holiday. And all you'd have to do is go to Amazon and either type in The Football Game or type in Denninger, which is D-E-N-I-N-G-E-R. And you probably have a graphic somewhere that says that. And you'll find the book. So it's available now, and the publication date is early September. So all you football fans out there, check it out, and I hope you'll enjoy it.
Pre-order the book. It's the easiest way to do it. Dennis Dettinger, everybody. Thank you, Professor.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Good to see you, Craig.
You too, always.
Cheers.
All right. That's the chat with my former professor. I didn't think I'd ever have the chance to have a former professor on the show, Anthony. But he wrote a book, and I can't wait to read it. He's sending one my way. When I'm done with it, do you want it?
Sure.
Great.
I would definitely take it. And actually, I have a fun fact.
Yes.
So, just like you, I had Denninger as well.
Yes.
And it actually was the fourth semester. I have my, I guess, memory off a little bit.
Yeah.
But guess who came to Syracuse when I was there and who brought him?
You're going to have to
be a broadcast. All right. He's a broadcaster.
Okay. Denninger brought him.
He's a Syracuse grad. Denninger
doesn't narrow it down. Tirico, Ian Eagle, Sean McDonough.
He brought Mike Tirico to our class. That was the first time I got to shake his hand. And he actually told us all about, you know, what goes into, you know, prepping for a game and like what he typically does for like a regular season game. And then what he would do for like a playoff game and things of that nature. So it gave us good perspective on, you know.
Nice. Yeah, that is the benefit is you just there's great broadcasters everywhere.
Yeah.
That calling all the games, doing all the big stuff that are alums that are willing to go back. And I'm just waiting for our call, Anthony.
I was about to say
when do we get called in to go speak to the youths at Syracuse and educate them about radio and talk radio? Because we're clearly doing it right, baby. There's no other way to do radio than this show.
No other way.
By the way, speaking of Orange friends, I was talking with Noah Eagle earlier. You're literally eating. Anthony is eating. Is that clementine?
I call them clementine. Some people think all oranges are oranges.
I mean, it's an orange family fruit.
Yeah.
Right now, there's tangerine, a clementine.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, I don't know what you got there. But I was talking to Noah Eagle about coming on the show. And I think we're going to do something this weekend that we'll have for everybody next week. Because we can't have Noah live next week because he leaves for Brazil on Monday. Because he's calling the Eagles-Packers game in Brazil. So we're going to talk to Noah about his summer with Dwayne Wade and LaChina Robinson calling both men's and women's basketball at the Olympics. And then preparing for Big Ten football this year. And then the NFL game on Peacock next Friday. So Noah Eagle next week here on the show. Again, if you want more on Denninger's book and our chat, there's a full 45-minute podcast-length interview in the Hoffman Show podcast feed. It's labeled like bonus exclusive, so it's easy to find if you scroll down a little bit. Also, it's online, youtube.com/@CraigHoffman. And you can go check out the full thing there and check out the book, The Football Game That Changed America, wherever books are sold. When we get back, it's back. Never read the comments time on the Team 980.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Coming up at 6 o'clock, we will dive into the biggest Commander storylines of the day. We heard from a lot of key Commanders today. Assistant GM Lance Newmark held a press conference. Dan Quinn had a press conference and was on with B. Mitch and Finley. Adam Peters was on with Grant and Danny across the hall, so we got some of that for you. Plus, Jaden Daniels spoke. I'm tired just saying all that. So we'll have the best of the sound of the day for you coming up at 6 o'clock as the Commanders are getting closer and closer to the start of their season. Actually, it's Thursday, Anthony, which means 1 week from tonight, the NFL season starts.
I can't wait, man.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped. When next week's a short week for us because Labor Day, Monday, we're off. When do we want to make predictions? Are we going to do that on Thursday, like our season-long predictions?
Yeah, I think we should do it on Thursday.
Okay, so we'll do that on Thursday, going into Thursday Night Football that night, the season opener. We are going to do our fantasy draft next Wednesday at noon. We filled up the league yesterday. I was like, hey, I will sacrifice my evening to do a fantasy draft at 8 p.m., if everybody else needs to do that. And apparently we filled the league with a bunch of dudes who don't have regular jobs that keep them busy from 9 to 5. Literally every email response that I got to our league so far, Anthony, was, yeah, I'd prefer the midday. So noon next Wednesday, Hoffman Show Fantasy League Draft. We will live stream it on my YouTube page at Craig Hoffman.
Are we not doing it during the show?
No, we're not doing it during... We can't do a fantasy draft during the show. We have to do the show.
Didn't we do one?
Yeah, but that's because we had to. Last year, like on Thursday, day the season started, like we didn't have a choice. Yeah. And I wound up like auto-drafting half my team because I had to host the show.
Okay. Oh, so you want to take it serious this year and you want to hopefully win.
Yeah. You know, I damn near won anyway.
You know who won it? I think, did I win the first year?
I think you won the first year. I think, did you win or did you have the best regular season?
I think I won the first year and I lost last year.
In the championship game. Yeah, I had a late surge last year, but it was too little too late.
Yeah, I don't know who I played in the champ. They destroyed me.
Yeah, sometimes it be like that.
Yeah.
I also already adjusted the draft settings. Last year was painful because it was 90 seconds per pick. I already put it down to 60. And if folks want it, I'll put it at 30.
After the first round, maybe like 45.
I don't think I can do that. It's a drop-down menu, Anthony.
It's 30, 60, 90?
Yeah, there's not customizable settings.
For some reason, Why do I think we have 45 seconds? I don't know.
It's 30, 60, or 90.
Okay.
So we can, people can send their feedback on what they want it to be. But yeah, it'll be fun. We'll be live streaming it. One guy's going to be drafting from a pub in England, Anthony. Our guy Morgan.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
He's excited then.
Yeah. Very excited. Okay. Let's do it. Let's dive into the deepest, darkest part of the internet. YouTube comments.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, let's do it. This is how this works. Our show streams live on YouTube every single day at the Team 980. And then we take all that video content, we chop it up into the segments, and we post them up on YouTube for you to watch nice and organized on demand at the Team 980 and at Craig Hoffman. You can subscribe to either place, and you will get the highlights of this here show. Of course, we spent a lot of time talking about the Commanders, and today's pretty much, except for one other topic, a Commanders never read the comments. But what you do is you leave your comments on the on-demand content. We read through them and we pick some of the ones we want to respond to. And then we do this segment here called Never Read the Comments because we believe in irony. Okay. On the Commanders and the expectations for the season, Dave says, we are the ultimate if team. We have new ownership, new coaching, new system, new rookie quarterback, and 40% player turnover. I actually think it's higher than that. I think it's like 60% player turnover. We could win 10 games. We could win 4. Nobody really knows what this team will be. In preseason, the starting defense is yet to play a snap together. Same with the starting O-line. Anthony, I was listening to Robert Mays and Derek Klassen on the Athletic Football Show, and they were doing their NFC East preview, and Robert said something that I actually really appreciated, and it was like a good gut check on the Commanders, and he says, this feels like a lot of August ideas with this team. It's like, oh, we'll move Jamin Davis to edge. Oh, we're going to try this guy here. Oh, we think we're going to do that, and it feels like there is a lot of what ifs. Now, a lot of them could work. I don't think these are crazy ideas, and they have put in the work to make them work. That's really important, right? When you take a gamble on a player from a development standpoint, you have control on some level of whether or not it works. If you're good at developing players, much better chance it works. But I definitely do think that there is an enormous like range of what this team could be this year, anywhere from like a 5-win team, which I don't predict, to a 10-win team, which I also don't predict, or they could finish anywhere in the middle.
I mean, I think that's why this year, sort of kind of they position ourselves to like contend or compete if it does work out. But at the same token, you know, they're hoping to just build off of this year and allow it to be a developmental year. So if Jamin Davis, you know, doesn't work out at DN, like,
okay, right, he's exactly. A free agent. See ya.
Exactly. Like, so I think that's more so like what they're like working with.
It's one thing that I really like though, how they structure this is a lot of their experiments are easily move onable yep. from Jamin's in the last year. Some of the other guys that they're going to try to give bigger roles, like if it doesn't work out, they'll just move on after the year. There's not a lot of contractual ties. Mm-hmm. And even frankly, some of the veterans, if Bobby Wagner, all of a sudden it's like, oh dang, he finally hit the cliff. That sucks. Then they'll move on. If he turns out to be London Fletcher 2.0, then sweet. Bobby will be here for 4 years and he'll consider, well, he'll probably still be a Seahawk when he goes to the Hall of Fame, but you get the point. In response to Trey Wingo on with us yesterday, Trey making a very light case that the Commanders could go worst to first. More of like he likes them relative to expectations where he feels like the Eagles and the Cowboys could certainly be set up to fail and the Giants are going to stink. Nick Arnold, 3525, says this team has absolutely no chance at all of going worst to first. The roster is worse than last year in some very important ways, namely the offensive line and cornerbacks as well as pass rushers. Now, I say this strictly by what is on paper. If some of these rookies and one-year contract guys show out, we could get 8 or 9 wins. We are more than likely picking our left tackle in the top 5 next year. Anthony, I just don't get how someone looks at this roster and thinks it's worse than last year. Like, you lost Kendall Fuller. Okay, fine. They were the worst coached cornerback unit in the league. Hopefully the coaching itself makes it better. And it's not like Kendall was awesome last year. Like Kendall was good. Maybe the talent's a little bit worse, but like if Sainer still is as good as Fuller was last year, then and Forbes is a better version in year two and BSJ is better, then you've gotten better. Like the bar is so low there. And offensive line, like one, the personnel is better this year. I don't know what they were doing at left guard last year. Now it's Nick Allegretti, who's not a world beater, but is better than what they had. Center, mega upgrade from Nick Gates to Tyler Biadasz. And left tackle, like Charles Leno. Okay, that's a downgrade potentially to Brandon Coleman, but we don't actually know yet. But the bigger thing on the offensive line is schematically and like conceptually, they're going to be so much better because they're not going to 5-step, 7-step drop 35 times a game. I'm just so sick of people saying that. And I can't wait for the season to start. If for no other reason, then we don't have to talk about last year anymore and say it's just some of the people who clearly didn't pay enough attention.
I think the fact that we have a much better quarterback, I think that should suggest that we are at least margin or slightly better than last year's team. Like without even looking at the rest of the team, because I think everything starts with the quarterback, and we've seen what Jaden Daniel has been, you know, so far. And We're looking forward to the season for it. I don't know how we're worse.
Worse?
Worse is crazy.
Worse on paper than that unit that lost four games or that won four games and then they shipped out like 70 of those dudes, even though there's only 53 here. One of the most viral calls that we've had in a long, long time, Anthony. Our guy Shane last week, who on the day of the Jahan Dotson trade, I found out later through the comments, not only called this show and went on just to lost his mind. Rio Robinson, who's another like Commander's YouTube creator, commented and he just goes, "That was embarrassing. He's not one of us." So cue Kendrick. But like he called B. Mitch and Finley. He called Russell. I think he called G and D. He called literally every show and went on the same unhinged rant about Jahan Dotson. Maybe called a bunch of people bums. That guy.
Maybe that's his friend, his cousin.
Maybe.
I don't know.
STNF2LC says, "I'm not going to lie. The Dotson one is true. Our fan base is acting like dude is trash because he had an off year last year. Everyone on the squad did." That was in all caps. "Nobody balled out last year at all. Dude was a great piece for this rookie quarterback. I'm still excited, though, and do see the path. I just don't understand it unless we get Higgins or Ayuk, and that likely isn't going to happen." STNF2LC and Shane. Why are y'all pretending like they don't have the entire spring and almost the entirety of training camp to judge this off of? They didn't just look at tape from last year and be like, "This guy sucks." They were with him every single day. And they were like, "This is not going to work." They were going to put him in the slot because he couldn't do it on what they wanted on the outside. And as a slot receiver, they didn't see a whole lot of upside compared to, say, Luke McCaffrey. Or whatever else they can get out of Jamison Crowder. And it's like, okay, if he's not a long-term fit for us, then we're looking for short-term. Then a guy like Crowder can do everything that Jahan could do that we would have asked of him. And maybe some of it better. They're different players. Jahan's got better long speed. Crowder might be quicker and certainly has a better understanding of how to operate in the small spaces inside because he's been playing in the slot his entire career. And then a guy like Luke, they want to make sure they have the reps and the opportunities for. And so they traded him. And like, it's not that hard to figure out, but you have to get over the fact that he's not the guy that you thought he was going to be as a rookie, or at the very least, he wasn't going to be here. And then you have people on the other side of the equation, Anthony, let's say at Python Delova says, "This is the problem with our fan base. They are prisoners of the past regime. Jahan Dotson was not that guy. This is a stupid take." This was one of those videos that was just fun to watch the comments roll in, Anthony. You had some people that agreed, a lot of people that disagreed, and let's just say I'm proud at how many people were willing to stand up and be like, "That dude, no, that was weird. That was embarrassing."
Yeah.
The fans are learning to police themselves.
That's good. Temper expectations.
Yeah, this is the community I wanted to create. There was a thread today. Actually, we're going to get to it here in a second. Of fans just... Actually, it's next. And then you had people who were just, by the way, there for on Shane's call for the entertainment at Magnus Richards says, "I'm weak. Hope he's wrong. But that was hella funny." And that is actually the correct response. Just here for the entertainment. It's only entertainment, Anthony. Yesterday, we had Adam Peters and Dan Quinn talking about the roster moves, the Noah Brown news, all that kind of stuff in our pick six. And we got this comment from Brandon. Brandon Crittenden, 3939. "Dude, we need guys that can cover A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, CeeDee Lamb, Malik Nabers, CB1s. And Anthony, you want to talk about the commenters, the listeners, the fans policing themselves? You ready for this?
Uh-oh, here we go.
First response, Andrew Vargas, 2473. "Okay, cool. Can you tell us which CB1 that is capable of covering A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, CeeDee Lamb, and Malik Nabers that another team cut we can pick up on the waiver wire? I'm dying to know." Same.
I'm curious as well.
Same. Eric Huffman, no relation, different spelling. 6665 says, "Old man yells at cloud. Ah!" Comment. Glenn Smith, 491. "Show me a cornerback that can consistently cover those guys, period. There's a reason that Brown and Lamb are so much better than average, and Nabers is likely to be at least above average." And then to top it off, typically we don't use user blah, 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 blah comments, but user OY1SQ9IO5X on 212 said, "Hut, said, worst comment award goes to Brandon.
Worst comment
Anthony,
award.
I feel like a proud papa.
Wow.
They just, I eventually commented on this thread and just went, I guess y'all handled this one, huh?
Yeah, clearly. Brandon, come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Team gets better in March and in April. It's August. Sorry. Now it's hold on to your butts time, everybody. Catch the ride of the NFL season. We went live amidst roster cuts yesterday, or actually on waiver wire and practice squad stuff yesterday. And turned out that the Noah Brown stuff started to pop around around that time as well. And Mr. Swervon, frequent commenter, said, are we making Noah Brown out to be something he's not? Before last season, nobody would ever even mention his name. He had one very good game. You'd be bringing in mid to compete with mid. And I appreciate this comment because it gives me the opportunity to say that for a select group of people, the answer is yes. You are making Noah Brown out to be something that he's not. People like things that are new, and Noah Brown is new. People like the idea of improving, and Noah Brown is an improvement. But let's be realistic about how much improvement Noah Brown is. Like, he's a mid-level number two at absolute best, and is probably more realistically a three or a four on a great or in a great receiving core. This is a receiving core that we're going to find out how good some of these guys can be. Can Deami Brown be a legitimate two after being a third round pick a bunch of years ago? Did he finally turn the corner? Like, we're going to find out. Olamide Zaccheaus had 600 yards in Philly a couple years ago. Like, let's find out if he can regain that form. But there's a really good chance that these guys all kind of have one really good day and some inconsistency. And, you know, it's an up and down type of year. And the second leading receiver on this team behind Terry is probably going to be Zach Ertz. And so for Noah Brown, I feel like there is a super engaged online Commanders fan that follows every bit of news from around the league, follows every single creator that's like, we got to go get Noah Brown. We got to go get Noah Brown. I can't believe the Texans cut Noah Brown. Yeah, Noah Brown. And I'm like, I hear you. I'm happy that they got Noah Brown compared to not getting Noah Brown. But that is very different than Noah Brown is the savior at receiver and some of the kind of over-enthusiasm that I think folks are having, Anthony, for Noah Brown. I just don't want to put that on Noah Brown, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like fans just wanted us to be active in the wire, to be honest, or just, you know, acquire a free agent, and, you know, Noah Brown was probably the best receiver out there, so.
For sure. Hey, they got the best guy who was out there.
Yeah.
That's good. That's better than nothing.
I just don't think that will necessarily move the needle in terms of
right
success for our team.
But they want to find out, like, Noah Brown, unlike Brandon Ayuk or T. Higgins, doesn't cost you anything.
Yep.
So that's why they go at that route. And last but not least on the Commanders, I think our roster, this is actually a point you made a little bit earlier, Anthony. I wish I'd lumped this comment back up earlier in the segment. I think our roster is a little underrated based on our, and this is from Dave NDC 9221. I think our roster is being a little underrated based on our QB potential. Offensive line and corner room are so weak, it is clouding a little bit of our season-long ability to win. We'll see on O-line. We'll see on corner. But I do think it's a good reminder that quarterback can elevate, and we'll see if Jaden can do that. But I think on a more important note, the kind of overrated, underrated, optimism is relative. Like, people, there are some people that are like, wow, man, this is, they're going to be so great. They're going to win 10 games. Or they're drawing that based off of the enthusiasm that those of us that cover the team have for this group. I wouldn't misread that optimism as a lock of success. It's merely like, hey, this is good. They're going to be more competitive. They're not skipping steps. They're doing smart things. But there's just a reality of talent and lack of talent that we're going to have to deal with, and we're going to see play out at times. There's going to be games where guys are a step slow and guys don't make a catch, or a throw goes haywire because Jaden still is a rookie. And I'm just going to go, yeah, that's where they're at right now. So yes, optimism is relative. I'd rather be this team than some other teams that I think are on the way down. But that doesn't mean that for this season, this team is going to win more games than maybe a team like Philly that's running the razor's edge on a bunch of stuff and their coaching staff, or Dallas that is making some mind-scratching contract decisions, et cetera, et cetera. All right. The other big topic in the comments this week, Anthony, was when we dove into the Keith Lee DMV food tour.
Oh, man. Looking forward to this.
Luckily, these are all YouTube comments. Although, I will say, we made two TikToks out of it as well, as we divvy up the content and spread it everywhere. And people on the one where I talked about how much diversity there is in the DMV food scene and that, you know, that I wish that that got more talk and the talk about DC as a food town, that apparently got caught up in the right side of the algorithm. That wasn't in the hater side of the algorithm. That was people going, thank you. Like, this is a great point. This is the point, which is what I said. And I will say the comments on mostly are on our long form, like the people that listen to the full segment, the full 15 minutes of thoughtfulness we gave the topic. Those comments were pretty great, Anthony. People were into it. There was like, hey, like, I appreciate the nuance that you have in talking about this, and that kind of understood that we weren't really actually going after Keith Lee. We were talking about the summaries that people were making off of his reviews. And then there were people that watched the shorts and the TikToks that wanted to murder us. So that wasn't great.
Oh, you know what would have been funny?
What's that?
If we pulled some comment from the shorts as well.
Oh, no, I did.
Oh.
I did.
Uh-oh.
Some of them are just funny. Like this one from at, I don't make the names, people. It's at bloodfarts. At blood-farts with a Z. I don't make it up. That's what it is. When did Keith Lee replace Zagat's? Like the rating service.
Wow.
That's funny. That's just good, funny stuff. Yeah. But then you had stuff like this. DC Community Carrot 9584. You're goofy. He eats at other spots. This was in response to your short, Anthony, about he needs to diversify his palate because a lot of the places that he went that he wasn't apparently happy about and wouldn't post his reviews publicly were soul food spots and wing spots.
Yep.
He goes, he eats at other spots. The visits are not only wings and soul food. How familiar are you with his visits? And I responded to a couple of these people on TikTok and a couple on YouTube just to say, like, hey, if you listen to the whole thing, our gripe isn't with Keith Lee. And we actually put that in the video. We're not mad at Keith Lee, although, hey, like, on that particular part of it, your research, you could do a little better. But, like, the whole point of what we were saying is, don't let this be actually representative of the DC food scene. This is a representation of the places that he went and his mm-hmm. opinion on them. But yeah, what Keith Lee does in visiting spots that need more attention or deserve maybe more attention and reviewing them, and then there's a huge bump in their business and he spends thousands of dollars, like, no beef with Keith Lee and spreading positivity. Like, that's awesome. Yabo Ollie Zone 1 says, the people in DC were the ones who recommended the food places for him to try. Y'all just mad he wasn't feeling it. He claims to have done... this is where I do have the one gripe with Keith Lee. He claims to have done research. The research wasn't very good based off of people with expertise. But then you have this, Anthony. At SBXD8GK says, in response to DC being a good food city, in fact, a great food city, no, it's not. Born and raised here, and the food scene is garbage. Why has he got to talk about his mama's cooking like that?
That's funny.
Born and raised here? Oh, and you think the food scene is garbage? Sounds like you ain't left the house. And you shouldn't talk about your mama's cooking like that on the internet.
There are too many holes in the walls that are like really good. Oh my. White Castle, Yellow House. I can just name them.
White Castle is in the chain?
No.
Okay, there's an actual local place named White Castle. Okay, yeah. I was about to say.
This is off Southern Ave.
Mm.
Off Southern Ave. Then you also got Yellow House on Minnesota Avenue. That was, man. But, you know, some people just got to get outside the house, Craig. That's all it is. That's all it is.
Got to get outside your house. Got to get outside your neighborhood. Got to get outside the district if you want to go full DMV. And Keith Lee did do some of that, including some trips in Northern Virginia. And last but not least, really quick, Anthony, because we're over time here. Remember caller Dontell a couple of weeks ago?
Dontell.
Who was like, I'm a Commanders and a Ravens fan.
Oh, yep.
Well,
yep,
we put up that video and asked whether that was allowed. And let's just say the answer was violently no. Summed up mostly, most succinctly by at Gibbs Old School, my father always says there was never such a thing as a stupid question. Until now, hell no, you can't be a fan of both teams. The people have spoken, Anthony.
Yes, they have. That's a hell of a response.
They spoke loudly. You know who else spoke today? Adam Peters on Grant and Danny. You know who else spoke today? His assistant GM, Lance Newmark, to a group of reporters in Ashburn. Dan Quinn, Jaden Daniels. We got all the sound for you. Top headlines of the day for the Commanders next on the Team 980.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.